This is ESPN Radio.
Overreaction Monday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, we got to go out there to talk to ESPN NBA reporter Dave McMiniman, because he was actually in Little Caesars Arena last night where the Lakers got the win, climbing to 500, 121-116 over the Detroit Pistons. But we all know that that's not the story. And so, Dave, I got to ask you, the ugly scene that took place in the second half, can you help us set the scene and then give us the sense that you got from players and coaches as to who was at fault with everything that took place between LeBron James and Isaiah Stewart?
Yeah, well, first of all, shout out to the Twitter user who dubbed the incident Big Trouble at Little Caesars. So that's where they go with, as the new updated edition of the Mouse of the Palace was certainly far less dire consequences than that fracas 17 years ago. But you know, basically what you had was a frustrated LeBron James seeing his team fall down double digits in the second half of his second game back. In his first game back, they lose by 20-plus points in Boston when they had a 14-point lead in the first half. Isaiah Stewart, young, rambunctious, second-year player, plays a ton of energy and a ton of physicality, has his right arm kind of caught in LeBron's ribcage area. And LeBron, you know, goes to forcibly swat it away. And the angle that he took to swat it away, he ended up catching Isaiah Stewart in the face. Stewart started bleeding, required 5 stitches after the game. And, you know, it was a wild scene. It took about 10 minutes for everything to calm down. And Stewart, you thought that his emotions had kind of subsided and he recognized that, okay, he actually wasn't going to put hands on LeBron. And then he'd run and elude his teammates and try to go at him again. And it happened, by my count, 3 times. And so, you know, LeBron's ejected for the second time of his career, a 19-year career. You know, Stewart's ejected, a couple other technical fouls, and now we wonder what's going to happen for tomorrow's Lakers game against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, whether they're going to see LeBron or not.
Yeah, Dave, how real is the possibility of punishment for one or both parties here?
It's real. Now, I think the precedent has been set in terms of the most high-profile, physical moment of this season so far is the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic, blindsiding Markieff Morris of the Miami Heat with a shove in the back that, you know, caused Morris to go to the floor and has continued to cause him neck pain. And Jokic, who had a prior history of, unsavory play with his dust up with Cameron Payne in last year's playoff, he only got one game. And so to me, you look at LeBron's history, certainly not known as a dirty player in a 19-year career. You look at Stewart's history, he's only been in the league 2 years, so he hasn't had a time to build a dirty reputation. And then you also consider that, yes, Stewart did run away from the pack several times, and that did cause the scene to continue to play out. He wasn't shoving people. He wasn't punching people. He just kept trying to pursue LeBron. And so, you know, if I was a betting man, I would go with no suspension for LeBron James and perhaps a one-game suspension for Isaiah Stewart. But as of right now, you know, less than 24 hours since the incident, the league is still investigating it.
Dave, in his post-game press conference, Frank Vogel mentioned this incident as something that could potentially galvanize this team. Now, I'm a Lakers fan, not sure if you knew that, but it sounded utterly ridiculous when he said that. But just curious as to how the players are receiving those comments from Vogel, and do they feel the same way about getting their season jump-started?
Yeah, this wasn't coach speak. Very similar sentiments shared by DeAndre Jordan and Anthony Davis after the game. And today you had Carmelo Anthony talking about the galvanizing moment where he figured it was his role to gather the guys together and be like, yo, we got to win this. It doesn't matter what the score is. Doesn't matter what the opponent is. Doesn't matter LeBron's in the locker room. At some point, we put our foot down. We start to win games. And that's what it's about. It's not that, okay, you know, how can it be galvanizing if you're playing the Pistons teams at 4-12? And yeah, they say that, but they said that earlier this season, and then they've had a stinker the next game. Like, sure, you could say all that, but they believe that, like, they were waiting for a moment where they reached their boiling point, and they looked inside and figured out what their character was going to be. And the will that Russell Westbrook displayed in the fourth quarter last night, the defensive intensity that Anthony Davis brought to the court, the fact that there was a little bit of adversity in that moment and they did come together rather than pull apart, like, I can buy it. I mean, it doesn't mean that we won't be looking at them having several more, you know, peaks and valleys over the course of the season, because I think it's just going to happen with this roster construction. But to me, it's a moment that will make them better in the long run.
Dave, we appreciate the time and the insight on the Big Trouble in Little Caesars. We look forward to hopefully fewer of these moments, but more conversations with you. Thanks, buddy.
That sounds great. Thanks, guys.
We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven here on Canty and Golic Jr. And Chris, I know you and I are pretty similar in the fact that when we heard galvanizing moment in here, I get that we look for motivation in strange ways over the course of long seasons, but that gets a big old eye roll from me.
Yeah, no question about it. If that's what you need to get yourself going, then you got bigger problems as a team. I'm not quite sure that the focus, the level of urgency that they're approaching their business with from a night-in, night-out basis is commensurate with a team that is capable of being able to win a championship. I mean, with LeBron James, it makes it hard to dismiss the possibility that this team will figure it out. But just based on what we've seen throughout the first month and a half of the season, knowing the flaws of this team, knowing the age of this team, it makes it hard for me to accept that this is going to be the turning point moment for the Los Angeles Lakers to get it together and to start going on a run and assert themselves as one of the best teams in the Western Conference. I don't see that happening. And furthermore, if they felt like they needed an incident like last night's game for them to kind of get back on track, I don't know what to tell you, man. I really don't. That does not feel good to me, hearing Dave McMiniman confirm that that's how the players in that locker room are talking about last night's game and last night's incident with Isaiah Stewart.
Well, and you know what else is interesting in light of what Dave just told us? For anyone, and we had this conversation last week, talking about Anthony Davis and his ability to, willingness to or not to, step up and be the leader for this team, to step up when LeBron James was out and sort of be that voice in the room. When you hear Carmelo Anthony say he felt like it was his responsibility to do that, Carmelo Anthony, who is in his first year in a Lakers uniform, that kind of shows you what the pecking order around there looks like, or at least who's willing to buy into that spot, Chris. Like, that's, I don't think, again, a long-term thing, but it's just this reminder that I don't think leadership's something that comes naturally to Anthony Davis in the way that Lakers fans wanted it to.
Oh, not only that, but the production in big-time spots is, you know, one of the questions that we have about AD. I mean, he had that moment in the finals in the bubble, but again, you're talking about a controlled environment, no fans, and, you know, it felt like it was kind of teed up for LA to take care of their business. But we saw it last week when they played against the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, it was a clear difference between what AD did and what Giannis did and the overall aggressiveness from both players. There was a different level. There was a different energy. And so with Anthony Davis, you have to question whether or not, you know, he can be the focal point of this team as they transition and LeBron gets later on in his career, knowing that he's going to miss time, knowing that, you know, he's not going to be the same player he was, you know, 5 years ago. Like, can Anthony Davis step up in those spots, not only from a leadership standpoint, but from a production standpoint? And right now, I still have serious questions about that. So, yeah, to your point, it's a little bit alarming when you hear Carmelo say, I felt like I needed to do that in that moment when LeBron was not around the team. Like, that could be a bit of a problem. So, yeah, there seems like there's issues going on from a chemistry standpoint and fitting all the new pieces together with the Lakers. And from what we're seeing from other teams in the Western Conference right now, it's going to be an uphill climb for this team in order for them to get where they want to go.
So we've got LeBron James and Isaiah Stewart both getting ejected as the Lakers beat the Pistons last night. We'll wait for updates on what the potential suspension status looks like for both sides here, and we will keep using the videos for meme content. Coming up next, though, speaking of memes, we have got a serious stare down going on in Seattle right now. We'll tell you who blinks first next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Kenny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, yesterday we had an interesting scene out in Seattle. Not that it's unusual for us to see the Seahawks lose, because that's just where they're at with it this year. They're 3-7, but the scene afterward at the post-game press conference, when Pete Carroll, after initially starting to answer questions, decides to walk away from the podium. He leaves the media. He says he's done. And then he came back several minutes later in street clothes, apologized for the early exit. But this is unfamiliar territory for the longtime Seahawks head coach. This is the first time since 2011 and only the second time in Pete Carroll's tenure as the Seahawks head coach where they've been four games under 500, and their offense is absolutely atrocious. Only 266 total yards offense and 2-10 on third downs yesterday. So the question is, what happens with Seattle and Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson moving forward? Because it doesn't seem like their team is moving in a direction that they usually are this time of year, which is trending toward the playoffs.
Yeah, you mentioned a very frustrated Pete Carroll. Here he was in the press conference after the game yesterday.
It's really surprising now that we're back a couple weeks with Russ back in there and that we had such a hard time scoring and moving the football. And we just, there's things that are, you know, the running game was pretty efficient, but it came down to, we were 1-for-5 in the first half. The hard part of it is it's what it's been like, and it hasn't gotten better, and we have to improve. We got to find our ways.
That is a man who is struggling right now, Chris. Like, this is the most dejected we've ever heard Pete Carroll, who built this entire Seahawks, you know, almost dynasty on perpetual good feelings, right? Constant wind in the sails here, constant positivity was the foundation for him and Russ here. And now, as Russell Wilson loses three straight games in a season for the first time in his career, this seems to be the breaking point, right? We've talked about it since the offseason. And Chris, I'm honestly not sure who may be gone first, right? We talked about Russ and all of this, but the concession, I think, for a lot of people was it was one or the other. And right now, it doesn't sound like Pete Carroll feels all that good about where he sits in this Seahawks situation. Like, this could be I don't think it would ever be both situation, but I don't think both of these guys are back here next year. That's for damn sure.
Well, I think Seattle as an organization is at a crossroads. They've got to ask themselves some tough questions. And one of the first ones should be, how long are we going to stay committed to Pete Carroll? Because there's been a lot of winning that's happened. They got a Super Bowl. They usually have a winning record in there. Most of the time, they're going to be in the playoffs. I want to say there was one year where they weren't, but, I mean, you're usually talking about this Seahawks outfit being in the postseason, and now it doesn't seem like they're going to, you know, be able to do that, and they're not going to have a winning record. So, ultimately, what direction do you go in as an organization? Do you trade Russell Wilson and give Pete Carroll more runway? Or do you make the commitment to the quarterback over the head coach, knowing that the quarterback probably has more years left in the National Football League, and you try to pivot and you go in a different direction and you find who the next leader of your franchise is in the coaching ranks? I think that's where Seattle is right now. But one thing is becoming increasingly clear, Gojo. One of these guys is going to be out at the end of the year. This is not going to be a situation where you're going to run it back and both of them will be back in 2022. Something's got to give, because the way that this season has looked, as ugly as it's been, something has to change in order to get this program back on track.
Yeah, Chris, if I had to pick, I think it's got to be the quarterback, right? Like, Pete Carroll has done unbelievable things for the Seattle Seahawks program. The foundation that he laid here, starting with the Legion of Boom that led to the back-to-back Super Bowl appearances and the win, all of it worked in a way that I think a lot of people were surprised by. Pete's last foray into pro football hadn't been great. The track record of college coaches trying to make that jump is a difficult one, with a lot of people who have failed along the way. It has been incredible, but We hear this all the time about whether it's a voice becoming stale or just the times changing so much. I think you've got to back the younger horse here. I think you've got to, in a league that is as driven by quarterback as any, believe that Russell Wilson hasn't all of the sudden just become completely lost playing the quarterback spot. And I know it has looked like a struggle. I know since coming back from injury, we mentioned he has now lost three in a row. But, Chris, I have to imagine there is still more for who at times has been a top five quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I feel like Russell Wilson has more gas in the tank. And knowing that he's only 32 years old and seeing quarterbacks play into their late 30s, early 40s, you would think that a quarterback that's been elite, and I think everybody would have him in that category over the course of the last 5 or 6 seasons, you know, you would decide that you're going to continue to, you know, support him and try to put the cast in place to allow him to have success. Because we know nothing is more important to Russell Wilson than enhancing his legacy. So it's going to take a commitment to the organization to do things differently than what they have the past couple of years. And I think one of those big things is potentially changing the voice at the top. And with Pete Carroll, since he's been there in 2010, there's only been 2 years that they've been on the outside looking into the playoffs. And only one when he had Russell Wilson as his quarterback. So it would be tough for the organization to pivot just after, you know, this season, because you don't really have a lot of seasons like that with Pete Carroll. But again, when you consider that Pete Carroll is the oldest head coach in the National Football League, you got to ask yourself whether or not it makes sense to continue to stay with him, knowing that there's been friction between him and Russ the past few years.
Yeah, this feels more and more, and we've talked about it since the offseason, like the last year and the last run for these guys. And for Russ, it's fair to ask the question, sticking around here as presently constructed, can this roster and the resources available to you, even without Pete Carroll, build the team you're looking for? Or as Tom Brady provided a blueprint that more and more guys are going to look into right now? Russ going to look at the Denver Broncos or the Carolina Panthers or any of these other teams that we talk about having quarterback needs and having rosters with much more flexibility and upside than the one he is currently on? ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance is proud to support veterans with its annual Keys to Progress vehicle giveaway program. Now celebrating 9 years of donating vehicles, helping veterans in need. Learn more at keystoprogress.com. Coming up next, though, as we look around for anyone to stand up, hold their hand up, and say, I'm actually good at football in the NFL, has an unlikely contender in a division that we thought was a foregone conclusion now stepped up to the plate. We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. Now, a better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. That's why Wendy's is serving a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese for just $1. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with a fresh cracked egg and cheese on a buttery, flaky biscuit for just $1. So don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese for just $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. We ready to trust the Philadelphia Eagles next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Overreaction Monday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And as you guys just heard on the update from Christine Lisi, New Orleans quarterback running back Taysom Hill signs a hybrid contract extension with the Saints on Monday that could be worth anywhere between $40 million and $95 million, depending on the position he plays, sources told our very own Adam Schefter. This deal comes along with $22.5 million guaranteed. Now, Gojo, I've seen it in contracts with players before where there are splits based on injuries, based on playtime. You also seen other mechanisms like per-game roster bonuses, things of that nature, but never a contract that's contingent on what position a player plays in terms of the actual pay scale that he's going to be on. So this is something that's very different as far as NFL standards are concerned.
Yeah, this is bizarre. Now, initially reading this, Chris, I looked at it, and Taysom Hill was a guy who in this year's training camp was in a quarterback battle with Jameis Winston, who ended up winning the job before ultimately getting injured and now being out for the season. We saw them elect to, based on the resources they had available to them, still elect to go with a different quarterback in Trevor Siemian under center, who, watching this past weekend, is not great. Like, Trevor Siemian is your card-carrying NFL backup quarterback. And so, initially, my read on this was, all right, this isn't a guy very likely to get this quarterback job, and especially now that you've tacked on an additional $55 million he'd be owed. If that was the case, Chris, there is now written incentive for them to now give him not give him that quarterback job. But if you had your quarterback being paid $23 million a year and he was actually somehow good enough, Chris, that would be a steal. The infatuation with Taysom Hill won't make any sense, but business-wise here, if it did work out, this is a bargain bin quarterback for the Saints.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, but the part that doesn't make sense is what you said earlier. At every turn where it feels like there's a natural opportunity to turn it over to Taysom to see what he can do, Sean Payton has gone in another direction. So I didn't realize – I don't quite understand why they felt like they needed to include this particular type of language in getting a contract extension done. Clearly, he's – a big piece of what Sean Payton wants to do down there, but it feels like they prefer him more in that hybrid role, whereas, you know, you can put him at receiver, you can put him at running back, and occasionally as a wildcat quarterback, as opposed to having him as your everyday guy under center. It feels a little off right there. It feels a little forced. Not to say that Taysom Hill isn't a fine football player, but it feels like he's one of those quarterbacks that you'd be constantly searching for an upgrade from, which is why I don't understand why you needed him to even include the quarterback piece within the contract.
Yeah, Taysom Hill has already signed some weird deals with the New Orleans Saints in his time, right? Like, we had that 1 year, 16, it's never felt really normal with Taysom Hill. We know most of this is Sean Payton, a guy who was putting him on the field in favor of Drew Brees, a future Hall of Famer in certain instances and more instances than most people thought, Chris. So now throwing this on top of it, like, I don't know. This just seems like an expensive jack-of-all-trades piece here, despite being an older player here, in a way that's never going to make full sense to me. But apparently for that Saints team that has seen attrition and turnover a quarterback that might not ever have their best wide receiver again on that team, that maybe they're just trying to hold on to what they can. I'm searching for answers that I don't believe in here.
Yeah, we don't have a whole lot of answers, but we know Sean Payton is a heck of a football coach, and so I think a lot of people around the NFL will give him and Mickey Loomis the benefit of the doubt when it came to how they wanted to structure this overall contract. But this is a huge win for Taysom Hill. We'll see if it ends up being a win or a value proposition for the New Orleans Saints, but it feels like the Saints got bigger issues, bigger fish to fry, because that's another team that's hustling backwards here of late. After they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they've gone 0-4. And their last three opponents, the Atlanta Falcons, the Tennessee Titans, and the Philadelphia Eagles, doesn't necessarily feel like it's murderer's row. So New Orleans Saints got issues bigger than trying to figure out why exactly they decided to give Taysom Hill the contract they gave him today.
Yeah, they got big issues like what happened on the field against the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend. So Taysom Hill breaking his bank account open is making moves.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
On the other side of this, as they search for answers, Chris, I know Eagles fans have to be feeling good right now. You get a big time win in this situation, but as it pertains to two questions around the team, are they going to be a playoff team? Maybe. Their lines of scrimmage look like they did yesterday. They might have a shot. Do they have their long-term quarterback? You and I talked about this a lot last week. This was another one of those games where I came away going, yeah, Jalen Hurts was fine. Like, he didn't do anything exemplary in this game. He had the one sweet juke move where he put his foot in the ground and took that thing to pay dirt. He's been dynamite as a runner, but as a passer in this game in particular, where their offense was handed on multiple occasions short fields to work with, it's not like Jalen Hurts did anything above and beyond in the passing game that I can get excited about.
No, he didn't do anything above and beyond, Gojo, but this is an opportunity for Jalen Hurts to develop. I mean, coming into this season, the guy had, what, 3-4 starts? So, like, he's still essentially on his rookie year, and with each performance, especially the last month or so, it's getting increasingly better. And just because his quarterback play doesn't look like it's high level in the conventional sense, and him being a guy that consistently wins from the pocket, it doesn't mean that it's quarterback play that can't win in today's NFL. All you got to do is see Lamar Jackson. Now, I get it. Lamar is a singular talent, but the Baltimore Ravens have a QB-led run game. it's not outside of the realm of possibility that the Philadelphia Eagles can morph into that and utilize that formula. And given what their defense has been doing, opportunistic with the turnovers, leading directly 2 points, Darius Slay, another one yesterday. Like, I don't necessarily see this as a situation where you couldn't have Jalen Hurts as your long-term quarterback. And, you know, you said it was two separate conversations as far as whether the Eagles are a playoff contender and whether Jalen is the long-term answer at quarterback. I think those things work hand in hand. If the Philadelphia Eagles are a team that makes the postseason, then I think that would be enough for Jeffrey Lurie and for Nick Sirianni to make the decision that we're going to give Jalen Hurts another year and utilize all of the draft capital that they have in 2022 in order to fill out the supporting cast according to what their offense has to be in order for you to get the best version out of Jalen Hurts. Similar to what we saw with the Baltimore Ravens when they brought all those tight ends in and they built it around the offensive line in that run game. They can do something comparable in Philly and have success. Now, as far as their prospects of being able to make the tournament, when you look at the remainder of their schedule, Gojo, I would probably have the Eagles favored in 5 of those 6 matchups. So in week 12, they're on the road against the New York Giants. Then they're on the road again against the New York Jets. They've got a bye week. The Washington football team at home. The New York Giants again at home at the Washington football team. And then the Dallas Cowboys to finish the season at home, a game that the Cowboys might not actually even need. So, I mean, to not have to get on a plane for the rest of the year, and given that they're playing a lot of NFC East opponents and the New York Jets, it's hard to imagine that the Philadelphia Eagles can't find 4 or 5 wins in their last 6.
No, I believe they can. And to be clear in the conversation around Jalen Hurts, Jalen Hurts shows incredible maturity. He takes care of the football. Like, he does all of the things that you want to do if you want to play the low-risk style of football that we've seen a lot of teams default to in what has been an extremely chaotic year, right? Like, for all of the offensive revolution in the NFL and all of the boom that we've seen there, this has been a year where playing closer to the old style and the old mean has certainly bought you a fair amount while defenses adjust here. And, Chris, we talked about last week those number comparisons between Lamar and Jalen that are there. The one thing that's not comparable is the skill sets, right? Like, comparing the two of them physically, whether it's throwing or rushing, is comparing a unicycle and a tricycle. Technically, they're made of the same parts, but they don't do the same things when they're out there. So I still think Jalen Hurts has plenty of opportunity. It's going to be interesting what it's got to look like towards the end of this season, because you could sell me using those draft picks, Chris, more because the opportunity cost isn't there in the draft, right? Like, you look at those quarterbacks there and say, hey, maybe we'll kick this can down the road another year, or maybe we'll use those picks to package to go out there and get another veteran. I don't think he has stopped them from shopping around, but I think he's shown very well for himself.
Well, yeah, I think the Eagles will always be looking, you know, for quarterbacks. I think Jalen Hurts hasn't done anything where you're saying, okay, this guy is – it's not – I guess the better way to frame it is – it's not what we saw from Carson Wentz in 2017 where you say, wow, this guy is ascended to one of the best, not only quarterbacks, but players in the National Football League. I don't think we've had that moment from Jalen Hurts. But what I will say is this. It's going to be awfully hard to talk Howie Roseman out of why they fell in love with the player if you're talking about the team having the kind of success that we're projecting for the Eagles down the stretch. And I guess that's my big thing about this team being a playoff contender. If you get into the playoffs with Jalen Hurts as your starting quarterback, not that wins are a quarterback stat, but it just shows that this guy gives you a base level of quarterback play that allows your team to be consistently competitive. And for an organization that's kind of been in flux ever since what happened with Carson Wentz and their head coach, it just seems to make sense to be able to offer some stability in the form of a guy, like you said, that's always going to do the right things and say the right things and present a solid face for your franchise. A
lot of issues there for the Philadelphia Eagles. Coming up next, though, much more real issues on the field for the Green Bay Packers. We'll get to them next on ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, in classic Minnesota Vikings fashion, another barn burner that they had out there at U.S. Bank Stadium, and the Vikings actually found themselves on the winning end of it against the Green Bay Packers in a game that didn't have any turnovers and featured over 800 yards of total offense. You wouldn't think that Kirk Cousins would be on the right side of a matchup against Aaron Rodgers, especially when A-Rod throws for 385, 4 touchdowns. but he was. And I guess the most impressive part about it was the receiver tandem that was Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. Both of those guys had 10 targets, and they came down with 8 catches, combining for nearly over 200 yards and 3 scores. So we talked about it going into this game. The biggest determining factor in this matchup would be how that Packers secondary would handle Thielen and Jefferson. And it turns out that those guys couldn't get it done against what a lot of people are calling is the best wide receiver tandem in all of football.
Yeah, on full display yesterday, Chris, like down the stretch of that game when it was blow for blow from these offenses, and the Green Bay Packers had that long completion to, I want to say, Marquez Valdes-Scantling with like 2 minutes left.
Yep.
I jokingly tweeted, you left Kirk Cousins too much time. Because normally we don't associate Kirk Cousins with being that dude, but the way it was firing yesterday, Chris, for Minnesota is going to have them in a bunch of these fringe playoff conversations now, right? That offense is potent as it was, and that defense getting able to just slow them down enough to be timely there, not necessarily what we've come to assume from a Mike Zimmer team, is going to have them right in it. How worried are you about Green Bay on the other side, though? Because we've got Aaron Rodgers now after the game, and this is him talking about the injury he's dealing with on his toe, likening it to turf toe and how it compares.
I've had turf toe. It's a little worse than turf toe. I'm just going to have to get through the bye and hope I can get some healing over the bye week. Probably the same schedule next week. Was in a lot of pain. Went in a halftime early to get it checked out. Yeah, I mean, it's very, very painful. Got stepped on in the first half, and that kind of activated all the symptoms I was having. So it's going to be another painful week next week, and then hopefully start to feel a little better in the bye.
Chris, you combine that with Elgton Jenkins, their most versatile offensive lineman, tearing his ACL and being done for the season. David Bakhtiari still not cleared from his ACL last year. And all of a sudden, the situation looks a little more dire than we would have predicted for Green Bay.
Yeah, I think Green Bay has got some concerns in terms of how to keep Aaron Rodgers healthy, and you're going to have to lean on your running game. But the part about that that's worrisome is that you're not sure exactly when Aaron Jones is going to be back. So it's going to be, you know, relying on A.J. Dillon and some of those guys in order to be able to fill in and get some of that balance on the offensive line. I mean, on the offensive side of the ball to allow you to protect your quarterback and stay out of, you know, long downs and distances where it's obvious for defensive lines to try to tee off on A-Rod. So, yeah, I think there are some moving parts there that you have to be concerned, but ultimately I think they have too big of a lead in their division that this Green Bay Packers team will figure it out, and they'll find a way to be able to hold on to the NFC North, and they'll be in the playoff picture. But, yeah, the toe thing, as a former player, when you have something like that that's bothering you, that doesn't get better until the offseason. So as much as Rodgers is looking forward to the bye week, if he's saying it's worse than turf toe, then that's going to be something that he's got to manage all season long. And that probably means changing, you know, how they do business in terms of his preparation throughout the course of the week. So, yeah, I think that if you're a Green Bay Packers fan, these are things you have to be concerned with, but ultimately things that I think your quarterback is talented enough to overcome.
He certainly is, but part of that skill set, as we know, Chris, is him being able to create outside of the normal body of the play to be able to move the pocket. And if those things are now happening behind an offensive line that is way less than whole at this point in the season, and with a quarterback who's got to now all of a sudden raise his game that much more, it really, I think, has sort of a force multiplying effect on what we might see from Aaron Rodgers going forward. So toe injury for Aaron Rodgers going to make things awfully dicey down the stretch. I'm with you. I think they're still going to end up winning the NFC North. But beyond that, this is a team we talked about. Back-to-back NFC championship appearances that struggled to defend against a marquee passing offense and passing duo on that other side, and now has to deal with injury on the unit that is supposed to be their overwhelming strength, as Elgton Jenkins, again, lost for the year with that ACL injury.
And they got to deal with the Rams coming off of a bye week, too.
Yikes. That part. Coming up next, though, that doesn't sound nearly as scary as the New York Giants having to deal with angry Tom Brady coming off of two losses next on ESPN Radio.